It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're in the company of the personal finance world's Miss Be Helpful, as she goes by on our YouTube platform. Janelle Espinal has money advice that targets high school, college students, young adults just getting started. She finds a lack of financial literacy is a big problem. In a study last year by the TIAA Institute and the Global Financial Literacy Excellence Center found Gen Z scored the lowest in a financial literacy study, and this generation faces big financial hurdles. Join in on Money Matters and Young People, 800-642-1234. Janelle Espinal is Director of Educational Outreach at Next Gen Personal Finance. Janelle, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me. I love talking about money and personal finance, and especially how it can help Gen Z. So I love this conversation topic.
Great. Well, let's start with here in Wisconsin, because most Wisconsin high schools teach some sort of financial literacy, but a personal finance course isn't currently on the books, required, you know, not required to graduate high school in our state. What do you think of Wisconsin's approach?
That's right. You know, actually right now, about 33% roughly of the students in Wisconsin are already getting a personal finance class. And almost all students in Wisconsin are getting access to this personal finance content, but it's through an elective course. So that means that students in the state of Wisconsin, when they reach high school, they have to opt in to this elective class in, if they want to be able to get personal finance. Only about 33% are going to be guaranteed to get that class. But the other, you know, large majority of students will only be lucky to get it if they opt in. And so what we're trying to see happen in the state of Wisconsin, what we're advocating for at NGPF, and of course, in, with this national movement, is to see what has happened in the neighboring state, and actually in Michigan, which in 2022 has a law that was passed that now includes personal finance as a full semester course, part of all of the high school graduation requirements in the state. So we would love to see that in Wisconsin as well, because that would take the number of students that are guaranteed to get access from about 33% all the way up to 100%. And it won't leave it up to students to opt in or not. It would say, you know what, you're guaranteed to get this class just because you are graduating high school in the state.
Janelle, what should a financial literacy course for teens include? Can you kind of sketch out what ideally skills, you know, what skills they would take away?
Yeah, so there's a lot of research that talks about just-in-time education. So that means that if you're going to be teaching students, especially teenagers, about money matters and money management, you have to make sure that it's something that they're going to utilize and apply almost right away. And so what that means is you're thinking about things like opening your first bank account, buying your first car, getting your first job, and setting up direct deposit. For a lot of students who are in high school, it also means applying for college. And so paying for college is one of the very important topics that we have to be teaching. What is your FAFSA? How do you file your FAFSA so that you can qualify for financial aid and make sure that you're maximizing the amount of federal grant funding that you're getting in federal aid before even looking at private loans or, you know, anything like that. So I think that the basics are definitely covered, right? Banking, budgeting, how to set up online banks or, you know, your mobile banking, because the reality is most Gen Z students are never going to walk into a bank branch, but they're going to most likely be using their phones and laptops to do banking. And then also understanding credit is so important. The types of credit that exist, managing credit, if you do choose to borrow responsibly, what does it look like to pay that back? And then, of course, we are very passionate about teaching students how to invest early so that they can build wealth over time and not, you know, be stressed out at, towards the end of their career and having to, you know, scramble to figure out a plan for retirement. We want them to learn about investing and what resources and tools and accounts are available to them at a very young age so that they can start building wealth at a very early age.
You said something I really want to pause on, because this is a generation that is truly digital native. I mean, they don't remember a time without smartphones. They don't remember a time without, you know, high-speed internet or internet itself. What does that mean for their personal finance?
That's right. You know, it's a great point. I do I'm a millennial, right? And I'm towards at the tail end of millennials. So I do remember having to wait for, you know, dial up, and I would be, you know, trying to get on the internet, and my family would get a phone call, and I would yell, "Don't pick up the phone. I'm trying to get on AOL," you know, and like, that was such a struggle that, you know, a lot of older generations have those memories, but these younger students do not have that lived experience. So for them, it is a high priority that when they are dealing with financial apps, and mostly any other apps in other spaces too, that they are high speed, that they're super user-friendly, very quick. They don't like to wait around very much for things to load or for things to pull up, you know, the right information or the right web page. And so because of that, there's this immediacy, this immediate gratification that is now we're seeing that kind of being applied to their finances and the way that they want to interact with financial apps and tools on their phones. So that means that they're looking for the fastest services. They're looking for trendy platforms that are really user-friendly and sexy and, you know, that have a very easy to use interface. So they like using investing apps rather than traditional brokerages online that would require you to kind of more so use a computer rather than having your mobile device to pull it up. And they also like things that are very quick. So for example, if I'm going to have to apply for this loan and it's going to take me several weeks or months to find out if I'm approved and for the money to come through, that's immediately going to be a turnoff to Gen Z. They're going to be a lot more interested in things like buy now, pay later, where I can immediately make a $20 payment. And now all of a sudden I get shipped all the products that I've ordered, even though I've only made a very small partial payment. That immediate gratification of getting the things, regardless of if my full payment was made, is something that Gen Z is a lot more comfortable with, and they're drawn to that.
That can also be a slippery slope there. Talking personal finance to K-12 students, Janelle Espinal, YouTuber, Director of Educational Outreach at NextGen Personal Finance. You can join in on financial topics just getting started, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Jean V in Middleton. Hi, Jean V.
Hi.
Hi, what would you like to bring up?
Yeah, so I'm a senior at Middleton High School, and in 2021, I created Know Your Dollar, which is a financial literacy program for middle school students. Through Know Your Dollar, I've developed an original curriculum, and I visit community centers, after-school programs, summer camps, libraries, to lead free six-session personal finance courses for students in the Madison area.
Yes, my daughter was in your audience once, and I just want to understand a little bit, when you talk with students about knowing their dollar, how do you communicate? What are you impressing upon them?
So one thing that I think like a lot of traditional financial literacy programs miss is the idea that money management comes down a lot more to like how to one's mindset and their relationship with money rather than just, you know, like the mechanics and like the technicalities of everything. So I think one of my biggest things that I try to impress upon them is that really trying to understand like what role does money play in my life and what role do I want it to play?
What have you heard from middle schoolers? What do they tell you?
Well, it's definitely a lot of, you know, like what do they want to be when they grow up? What kind of lives do they want to lead? Those are the kind of things that I find that they really enjoy discussing. And I think if more financial literacy education focused on that, I think there'd be a lot less apathy from students, especially.
Jean-V, thank you so much for calling in. Janelle, what do you hear there from Jean-V, who has her own course for middle schoolers?
Oh my goodness. First of all, so impressed that even just in high school has already developed a full curriculum. I love that. And I also love that, you know, they're reaching back to the students who are coming up behind them and saying, you know what, let's get them, right? We're in high school, but what about the middle school kids coming up right behind us? I love that. And I absolutely agree. What we're describing here is actually called behavioral economics. And that is a fancy term that basically just means the psychology of money. The way that your brain works when it comes to money choices and money decisions. And so actually in the NGPF curriculum, we have the very first unit in the semester course for high school, which spans about 18 weeks of instruction. That very first unit is called behavioral economics. And it covers things like your values around money, your brain and how it thinks through money choices, experiencing different cognitive biases that come into play when it comes to money, like loss aversion. and us having a lot of fear around losing money, which is why we're so overprotective of choices that we make around our money as we get older. Herd mentality or FOMO, right? These are things that we're seeing in headlines now, where fear of missing out. If all my friends are doing it, I want to do it. Hmm. Social media plays a big role in that, especially for Gen Z. So it's so true. You know, what the caller said is that if we don't include this in the classroom, we're going to lose this next generation, because they're mobile first, because they're so internet ready that they're being targeted with ads online on their social media, as well as via email and everywhere that they are online. They're being targeted and retargeted constantly, and it messes with their brain. So if we don't acknowledge that and teach them how to fight against that, then they're not really going to stand a chance, and they're not going to see personal finance education as being relevant to their 21st century experience.
Janelle Espinal, financial advice YouTuber known as Miss Be Helpful, leads educational outreach for a personal finance nonprofit with a curriculum that's really aimed at empowering students to make informed money choices. Join in on Gen Z and managing money, what you've encountered with financial decisions, and what you're up against. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As we unpack personal finance skills for the rising generation, Gen Z, and how young people face different economic problems than past generations. Gen Z was born between 1997 and 2012. Some in this generation have graduated college at the height of the pandemic, now face the worst inflation in 40 years. Join in with questions on new debt or being at a money crossroads. 800-642-1234. Janelle Espinal is Miss Be Helpful on her personal finance YouTube channel, leads educational outreach for a nonprofit, and stays with us. Janelle, you talked about, consumers increasingly being targeted by online advertisers based on their previous purchasing behavior. What should young buyers, in particular, as they are starting out and they do need stuff getting established, what should they be aware of as they look at these targeted ads?
Yeah, I think the big thing to be aware of is that advertising and marketing, especially as it is increasing online now, these tactics that they're utilizing are extremely advanced and they're very complex. So what they do is they combine different strategies together to like overlap the different strategies that they know for sure will work in convincing us to spend money, even if we didn't really plan to spend money when we woke up this morning. So it's very important to know that what we're up against is some really complex algorithms and some very advanced, computer technology that understands what it is that we like and the types of messaging that we would respond to. So not only does it look at our past purchases, but it looks at the things that we've stopped when scrolling and what we've looked at for a little bit longer than just a couple seconds. So it knows what catches our attention and it knows what we like. It knows what we're, tapping on and reading and what we're sending to our friends. So a lot of times when we're on social media or when we're surfing the web, what we're doing is just giving them more data to help them make a more informed decision about how to target us and how to retarget us. So we have to be very careful. And especially for young students, I tell them all the time is if you're shopping online, use a private window, a private web browser window, or an incognito mode, so that when you're shopping or when you're looking at things that you're considering to buy, it's not going to capture that. It's not going to save it and use that to inform your, the advertisements that you're going to see and the targeting and retargeting that will happen. It's very important for us to get comfortable, trying to adjust the privacy settings on our devices. Gen Z is so comfortable using the computer and their phones that they don't really see as many issues in terms of like the negative aspects of the lack of privacy because they were born into this and it seems very normal to them. But older generations remember a time where we weren't constantly being targeted and retargeted mm-hmm. and companies weren't fishing online for our data and to get to know us in ways that, you know, are a little bit problematic in terms of they get more and more invasive over time. So it's important for us to teach this to Gen Z and make them aware that, hey, I know it seems normal to you because this is how it's always been for you, but trust me, it's not normal for corporations to be so invasive. And there are small steps that you can take to be a little bit more private with all of your behaviors online.
Let's take another call. Carol is with us from Madison. Carol, hi. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was just responding to your guest mentioned that, you know, kids want immediate information, especially when they're looking for schools. And I happen to know that all students have access to a program called Secure Futures. It's a nonprofit organization. All students have access to this program, and it allows students to set up budgets, and it also has all the college tuitions programmed into whatever they set up. I don't know. So a kid can set up a budget for one school and how much it's going to cost and how much you're going to have to get in loans and stuff like that versus another. And suddenly it becomes really clear how much they're going to be obligated financially, you know, depending on what school they go to or whether they go on to the military or on to a technical school. Or
they look at their path ahead and the numbers start to really add up and are very clear in terms of what decisions they make. Carol, thank you for that. Janelle, what do you make of a platform like this?
I absolutely love that. And I think we need more. We are very well aware of Secure Futures and the work that's being done there through the Money Path program. And we love it. What we want to see more of is more comprehensive financial platforms like that, that really explore different pathways after graduation. Because the truth is, some of the high schools around the country and even, you know, specifically within Wisconsin are going to be very college focused, right? They're going to want to push students to think about college and to plan for college. But the reality is we have to understand that nowadays students are looking for alternatives to college as well. They might be interested in joining the military or doing an apprenticeship program or going to trade school or community college instead of that traditional four-year college pathway. And so if we don't make room for that in the curriculum, we'll lose a large chunk of the student body that needs to learn about money, but maybe is not necessarily tuned into this traditional four-year college pathway. And so, you know, we love that. We do think that it's important to expose students to the many different pathways that happen after graduation, because no matter where you go, what pathway you choose, you still got to be able to deal with your money.
Well, speaking of tuned in, the Biden administration has been very tuned into student loan forgiveness. A lot of talk about that on Capitol Hill. I want to get your take. Is there an ideal per student amount of debt to forgive?
Yeah, I mean, this one is tricky. And what I always tell people is, you know, our expertise is in personal finance education, in implementation, and also in preparing teachers to teach the course. I'm not an expert in the policy, right? So I wouldn't know, you know, exactly what the right policy would be. And I'm sure that no matter what policy suggestions we bring up, someone somewhere will find something wrong with every policy suggestion and proposal, right? Because it's impossible to come up with a policy that's going to make everyone happy. And so the policy decisions are tough. But I do think that what the data shows has been very apparent that when you look at the inflation rate that we're experiencing right now, 9% inflation across the board in general in our economy is something that we're all suffering through. And we're all really struggling to figure out how do we protect our cash in an environment where everything is being inflated on average 9%. So that's really scary for us. Now, when you look at college inflation, the price of tuition specifically, it's been about 9% inflation for the past 20 years straight. So if we're struggling and we're saying inflation at 9% is very, it's very high, it's so hard to deal with this, imagine that every year for two decades. And so there's a clear problem, right, that's happening with paying for college, student loan debt at the college level, and the tuition prices that we're seeing students and their families being charged to attend college. And so we know there's a problem. And so that means that there is a need to create some sort of solution and some sort of aid and some sort of help to really create a resolution here, because there's a real problem. But in terms of particular policies, it's very tough to say if you know, I'm not a policy expert.
Janelle Espinal is Miss Be Helpful on YouTube, part of CNBC's Financial Wellness Council. Join in on how Gen Z is adapting and responding to these economic times, challenges you've encountered getting started, perhaps for the young adult in your life, how you've helped them or couldn't help like you wanted to. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We talk about Gen Z establishing a financial footing, the oldest of this generation now in their mid-20s. Bank of America has new research on the money habits of Gen Z, finding that 3/4 of respondents are taking steps to earn additional income, like getting a second job or changing jobs. Join in on managing day-to-day expenses, paying down debt, how you learn financial skills, and what lessons are essential? 800-642-1234. Janelle Espinal is Miss Be Helpful on YouTube and with Next Gen Personal Finance. Stays with us. Janelle, let's shine the light on you for a moment. Daughter of immigrant parents, you attended an Ivy League university on scholarship, but you also accumulated thousands of dollars worth of credit card debt as a teacher. What did you do to get out of debt? And what is your advice to other millennials facing this?
Yeah, I absolutely love sharing my story because I know that it is not that unique. It is a common American story, and especially for many children of immigrants. I never really talked about money growing up. So when I got to college, I thought my scholarship covers everything. I'm so lucky. It's going to pay for my tuition. It's going to pay for my room and board and my meals. And, you know, I worked really hard in school so that, you know, academically I was going to be able to get a scholarship because I knew my family couldn't afford to pay the tuition. But when I got to college, my freshman year, I remember that all of the classes had different textbooks on the different syllabi from different classes. And he had different textbooks listed. So I went to the bookstore to get those textbooks. And we're talking about hundreds of dollars per class. So added it all up. And I'm like, if I'm taking 4 classes and each class has, you know, $300 worth of books, we're talking about $1,200 on textbooks in one semester. And then I need a laptop, which is another $1,000. So we're talking about almost $3,000 within the first few weeks of my freshman year. Where in the world was I supposed to come up with that money? And so I immediately got a little stressed out, but I knew I couldn't call my family. My parents were not going to be able to help me. I knew that much. And so at that time, it was very easy to get a credit card at the age of 18. You know, so I remember going up to a tent where they were giving out T-shirts and Frisbees if you signed up for a credit card. And so I did that. I signed up for my very first credit card and I got $1,500 on that card. And I started to, you know, use it to buy things that I needed, right? Like my textbooks and my laptop. And once I maxed out that card, I set it up to make my basic minimum payments every month so I wouldn't miss one, which was about maybe $25-$30 a month. And then I got a second credit card once I saw how easy it was. And then my second credit card was a little bit of stuff I needed for school, of course, but then also things I didn't quite need, but you know, I wanted, because being in college, I was trying so hard to keep up with the cool kids. I was trying to keep up with my wealthy peers and, you know, just look like I fit in, even though I was clearly, you know, a low income kid on a college campus that was, you know, a lot of wealthy families were sending their students there. So I was trying so hard to keep up. By the time I graduated, I had $20,000 of debt. And credit card debt is some of the highest interest rate debt out there. Mm-hmm. So it was piling up very quickly. Even though I was making my minimum payments, it felt like my balance was never going down. And that's where I really realized there was a problem, because I didn't know much about financial literacy, but I knew basic addition and subtraction. I'm like, if I'm making a payment, that should be subtracting it from the balance. Why is my balance going up? It doesn't make sense. And so I ran all the numbers, and that's when I realized the interest was accruing, you know, faster than I could keep up. So I was very, very lucky one day to walk into a pharmacy and see a book called Women and Money, which was a book written by Susie Orman. And that was the very first time that I had been exposed to anything about money in a serious way, you know, understanding interest rates and recognizing that credit card debt can accumulate very quickly and you need a plan to be able to pay it down. And so that's what I did. I made a plan, and I actually used the Avalanche method for debt repayment, which is one of the two very popular strategies, the other one being the snowball payoff debt repayment strategy, which basically means you choose which debts you're going to pay off first based on a priority and put them in order. So with the Avalanche method, you're going to put your debts in order of the highest interest rate debt first, mm-hmm. because it's growing the fastest. So you want to squash that the fastest. So for me, that was, you know, some of my higher interest rate credit cards that were 23, 24% interest. And the Avalanche method says, well, instead of prioritizing the highest interest rate, focus on the highest balance, because that helps you feel like, or lowest balance.
Uh-huh.
Lowest balance, because that helps you feel like you're ticking it off of your to-do list. You're feeling good. Like, okay, I paid this one off, and it builds momentum and gives you a little bit of motivation to keep going. So I use the Avalanche method simply because my interest rates were very high, and I wanted to prioritize those credit cards with high interest rates. And so I would just snowball down the amount. So once I paid one off, I took the money I earmarked for that credit card and I put it to the next one with the next highest interest rate. And I did that for about 18 months. And I was sending about $600 every 2 weeks from my paycheck in order to be able to be done within 18 months, which was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do, because you're just giving away money every month.
And it's interesting you did in every 2 weeks out of every paycheck. So what I'm hearing as well is this was more than just, you know, once a month payment. You were going at it every single 2 weeks and chipping away at it.
That's right. And I think that's a tip that a lot of people discount. Like, they don't realize how helpful it can be to break down your finances into weekly or biweekly patterns. So instead of making that one monthly payment, you can break down that payment to two or three payments and send smaller amounts throughout the month. And that can actually help you knock off some interest.
Well, sometime on that college campus, someone's going to go out on a date. you know, how should Gen Z be discussing finances in their romantic relationships?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is absolutely going to be something where it's a little bit more about your personal take on, you know, romances and relationships. If you were raised within a culture or within a family where there are very traditional values and you are in a heteronormative relationship, you might feel more comfortable with, you know, that traditional arrangement where one person pays. And that's something that you can't just assume to be the case, though. I think that's very important, especially now as there are dating apps that allow for you to kind of talk and chat before you even meet in person, that you really put some of those things out there early on and just have a conversation about it. Hey, I'm happy to go on this date. I'm really excited that we're planning this. Let's go ahead and like split this 50-50, because that makes me feel comfortable knowing that, you know, we're both going to chip in to making sure we have fun and to, you know, having a good meal. Just putting it out there what you feel comfortable with, because the worst case scenario is that you're sitting in person with someone and you come to the table with an assumption that they're going to be paying. And yet they came to the table with an assumption that you'll be splitting. And then in that moment, you're both uncomfortable. So there's an easy way to prevent that, which is to just get ahead of it and throw it out there before the date. Like, hey, you know, let's split this 50-50. Okay. I'm comfortable doing that so that we can, you know, split the concert tickets or split tacos or whatever it is that you're going to do together.
Janelle Espinal with us. Must be helpful on YouTube as we talk about financial tasks, managing day-to-day expenses, and what the new generation just starting out is up against. You can join in on money tips, money challenges you've encountered. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm wondering, Janelle, when did you ultimately talk with your family about the credit cards and what had happened as they had piled up? What was that conversation like?
Yeah, it was a tricky one. And I would definitely admit that it was not easy for me to have that conversation. But I knew that it needed to happen when my family was expecting my help financially. So my parents, you know, low income immigrants have always kind of used the support of their children. So there's 9 siblings in my family, and we've all tried our best to, you know, help our parents with some of the bills at home or to help them with groceries. And so once my family started to say, oh, you know, now that you're out of college and now that you've got a full-time job as a teacher, you can start helping more. You can take on the electric bill, take on the cable bill, help with the gas bill. And I was like, oh, wait, these bills are, it's kind of a lot. And I've got my own bills that I need to pay. And so I knew then that there was a friction and that I needed to have a conversation. So what I did, instead of attacking my family and coming from a place of, you know, frustration, saying, you think I'm going to pay for everything? I can't, you know, I've got my own things to pay for. Instead, I actually sat down and fixed up my budget, and I worked through it in a spreadsheet so that it became very clear where every dollar was going. When I made my paycheck, when my direct deposit hit, where was that money going? And so once I fixed my budget and it was very organized, I went to my parents and I said, this is my spending. This is what it looks like when I get my paycheck. And I want you to see it, so that you understand when you ask me to help chip in for this thing or for that thing, that if I say, no, I can't do that, it's not because I don't want to help you. It's not because I don't want to assume my responsibility as your daughter or that I don't want to do my part in this family. Not at all. It's simply because I'm trying to pay off debt and I'm trying to manage my finances responsibly, which means that I can't just take on our family's situation, but I also have to take on some of my individual and personal responsibilities and fix, you know, my own finances. So I made it very clear to show them and be very open with them. And I think that that's what allowed my family to really trust that I was coming from a good place. I wasn't coming from a place of negativity or, you know, trying to deprive them of helping them with my finances or anything like that, but more so just from a place that they could understand what I was going through and why I was trying to plan accordingly for my finances.
True transparency there. I mean, you were really able to talk openly then at that point about where you're coming from, and that probably was a huge step in the right direction.
Absolutely. And I do think transparency is very important. You might not be comfortable sharing every detail and all the facts and figures, but breaking down what it is that your plan encompasses, because I do think that it can help in two ways. One is it can provide clarity and an understanding of why it is that you're doing what you're doing. And two is it can actually help your family to like plant a seed within themselves about how they could be doing something similar. So I remember when I did this, when I showed my family, you know, the budget that I had, one of my siblings actually texted me privately afterwards and said, can you help me set up a spreadsheet like the one you have? Because I'm trying to pay off one of my student loans. And I also have a credit card that I've maxed out. And I didn't realize, you know, that I was at this point. But now that you mention it, I could appreciate that help. And so that was that small seed that I planted with that conversation that eventually grew to help even one of my brothers to better manage his finances.
Janelle Espinal, our guide, discovered her passion for financial literacy, created an educational YouTube channel called Miss Be Helpful. Still time to talk about money challenges, choices of Gen Z, what you've experienced as part of this generation, or having someone in your life in this age group talking about money choices, 18 to 25. Join in, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We take a deep dive into Gen Z's money priorities and long-term goals in these difficult inflationary headwinds. Join in on what the 20-something in your life has taught you about money management. Still time, 800-642-1234. Janelle Espinal is with a nonprofit helping young people learn skills and prepare financially for life after high school and stays with us. Janelle, you lightly touched on this, but I want to talk about inequalities and demographics, especially for Black and Hispanic young people. What would you tell them about how to reconcile the racial wealth gap when they are starting on unequal ground to begin with?
Yeah, it's definitely something we have to acknowledge. And I know that a lot of educators may feel conflicted about how to bring this up in the classroom. But the reality is that if we don't acknowledge it, what we're doing is further isolating the students who feel it and see it every day and aren't hearing it or are seeing it acknowledged in the classroom, right? So we have to validate and acknowledge that the experience of a Black or Brown American is going to be very different from the experience of a white American in our country, and that by and large is going to be true because of things like the wage gap, right, and the racial wage gap, but also the racial wealth gap. And so those are two things I think we should talk to, which is the difference between income that we're earning and net worth, right? The wealth, the total amount of wealth that a family has accumulated, because there's a gap in both of them. But I think that the opportunity for us to really help empower students in the classroom is the opportunity to think about wealth, because a lot of times we focus on income, earning income. But the reality is that even if you earn $1 million a year, if you're spending $1 million a year, then the difference between your earning and your spending is zero, which means that you're not building any wealth, even though you are a high income earner. So we need to shift our focus away from having so many conversations about how much money we're making, you know, in a salary or in a job, but focus more on what the wealth building strategies that can allow us to actually begin to create generational wealth. What can some of those strategies be? And that's a combination of investments, right? Understanding different appreciating assets that we can invest in, but also understanding taxes as well, because there are so many ways that taxes and investing, those two spaces overlap. And families that have been able to, for generations, that have been able to build and pass on generational wealth, know very well that there are tax strategies that they can use to pass down wealth tax-free from generation to generation. And that's a very big deal. So I think that we have to really, you know, go beyond the conversation of increase. Of course, we should talk about, you know, wages and earnings, because that's a very important topic. But we also got to dig deeper and help students understand that the earlier we begin to understand wealth building strategies and what is accessible to us via, you know, investment accounts and different opportunities to begin building wealth, even with a small amount of money, that can be very empowering for students. And I'll give a quick example. You know, students who I've seen in low-income communities like the one that I grew up in will often say, well, my mom doesn't want me to invest because she doesn't want that to hurt my opportunity to get financial aid. And then what I respond with is I say, you know what, that's a valid concern for your mom. And so what I want to do is actually help you learn about investment accounts that will not affect your financial aid eligibility status. So that would be something like a custodial Roth IRA, which is available to students who have earned income. So if you're a teenager with a job, instead of putting that money into a 529 plan, it might be a better opportunity for you to open a custodial Roth IRA and consider how that can actually help you build up your wealth, but also come in handy when it comes to paying for college and not affect you negatively when it comes to financial aid eligibility. So these are the types of things that I think a financial education can really empower students to make these decisions, because they'll have the knowledge needed to compare and contrast investment accounts and vehicles and just make a choice about where they want to park their money and think about it over the long term.
Janelle, one of the traditional wealth building routes has been owning a home, owning property. And as we look at the Fed raising interest rates, which is really making the cost of buying a house significantly more expensive, we look at really tight housing markets. What is your advice to millennials who really want to stop renting and buy that condo or home right now?
Yeah, I think it's very, very important to do a very in-depth analysis of whether it is better to buy or rent based on your very specific profile. And your specific profile means, you know, where you are financially, where you are geographically, so your zip code, how much you're able to put towards a down payment, you know, not just your income and your credit score, but all of these things combined create your very unique and individualized profile. And there are resources online. I mean, it would probably take you just a couple seconds to search, is it better to rent or buy? And pull up a comparison tool where you can actually go in and enter all of the very specific details about your decision-making process. And that will give you a good idea about whether the environment is right for you to purchase a home or for you to continue renting for a several amount of, you know, years. That gives you time to be able to prepare yourself for a home purchase. Because I think that one of the big things that is wrapped up in this beautiful idea that we all have of pursuing the American dream is home ownership. However, we often are so obsessed with the dream and the idea and that vision of us living in a home that we own that we forget to do that financial analysis. And we forget to look at that financial piece to say, is it a good time for me to make this financial decision? Or is there, you know, a better time for this in the future? Or does it make sense for me to check out a different location, maybe a different zip code?
Right, with work from home. Work from home and remote work has really opened that particular question up for sure.
Absolutely. So I just think it's a much more complex topic. It's much more involved than, do I feel like I want to be a homeowner or do I feel okay renting? It's not just about your feelings. It's really not. It's a big involved financial decision.
Well, we are only a few seconds left. If you could give one tiny piece of financial advice to get a young person started on their path to financial stability, in a few words, what would you tell them?
Well, I would say that if you could go back to thinking about when you were in the fifth or sixth grade, it doesn't feel like a very long time ago if you're a teenager right now. But in the future, you'll look back to being in high school and you'll feel that same way. Like, oh, it didn't feel like it was that long ago. But what if you could go back to the fifth grade and actually start putting money aside, either in a savings account or in an investment account? So today, when you look back at the fifth or sixth grade and go, I'm so glad that I started setting aside that little bit of money every week or every month in the fifth grade, because now I've got thousands of dollars to help me to start a business, to pay for college,
start
to invest
early.
In home.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think the key is to start early and consistently keep doing your savings or your investing habits often.
Janelle, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Janelle Espinal, Director of Educational Outreach for Next Gen Personal Finance, member of CNBC's Financial Wellness Advisory Council. Miss Be Helpful on YouTube. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.